Hi, I'm Lizzie, and this is Once Upon a Coaster, the podcast dedicated to exploring classic and timeless older roller coasters. I was born and raised a coaster nut, come from a large family of engineers, and I have a degree in history, making me a unique candidate to talk about what makes these older rides so fantastic. Join me for new episodes bi-weekly where we'll explore some old classic roller coasters and talk about what makes them so special in today's ever-changing coaster world. Are you ready for this ride? Please keep hands and arms inside the car at all times and prepare for another episode of Once Upon a Coaster. Well, hello everyone! Welcome, welcome. It is great to be back today for a brand new episode of Once Upon a Coaster, your favorite podcast that dives into those old and forgotten roller coasters that we all still love. I'm Lizzie, your host, and if you're just tuning in for the first time or for the first time in a while, we are midway through season 6 currently, and honestly, it's been one of my favorite seasons that we've put together so far. On the production side of things, it's been a great season for us here at Once Upon a Coaster. We've had tons of fun putting these episodes together for you, and it's been a blast introducing you to new roller coasters, new stories, and new deep dives into some old and historic coasters. We hope that you have been enjoying this season as much as we have. Today's episode is no different, and it's going to be a really fun story to go through together in just a few minutes. It's crazy to me that we are already approaching the end of the season. After this episode, we will only have 2 more episodes left to finish off the season. However, I am getting a bit ahead of myself here, wishing that we could stretch these seasons out to last forever. We can't, but just a heads up, we are definitely approaching the end of season 6 here together. We have a big episode today, a busy episode today, so let's kick things off right away with a brand new Coasterversary. Today's Coasterversary brings us back to Knott's Berry Farm, a park we haven't been to since season 1 when we took a look at Montezuma's Revenge for our second episode ever. Our trip to Knott's won't be quite as extensive today, but we'll be stopping by to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Silver Bullet, which opened at the park in December of 2004. Any more with some of these Coasterversaries, I look at the roller coaster we're covering and I just think to myself, how is this ride that old already? And for today's Coasterversary with Silver Bullet, I just don't understand how it has already reached 20 years in age. I feel like if you asked me off the top of my head to tell you when Silver Bullet premiered, I would have said like 2009, not 2004. But here we are with a Coasterversary from 2004 and a roller coaster that doesn't seem as old as apparently she actually is. Anyway, let's take a few minutes to talk about this apparently older roller coaster. Silver Bullet is an inverted custom coaster designed by B&M. The ride is located in the Ghost Town section of Knott's Berry Farm and features a light western theme to the station and queue. The ride has a red and orange track with gray supports. Silver Bullet is 146 feet or 45 meters tall at its highest point, and it reaches top speeds of 55 miles an hour or 88 kilometers per hour. For as limited of a space as Knott's has for brand new roller coasters, Silver Bullet is quite a large ride for the park, gobbling up 3,125 feet of track, or 952 meters of track, which takes riders through 3 separate lands in the park, Ghost Town, Fiesta Village, and Indian Trails. Silver Bullet offers riders 6 inversions, including a 105-foot-tall vertical loop, a Cobra roll, a zero-G roll, and 2 corkscrews. Silver Bullet is kind of one of those quiet and under-the-radar rides that we all seem to forget about, which might be why we decided to feature her in this season's Coasterversary segment. She is definitely not B&M's first custom inverted design, and she's not the biggest or the fastest or has the most records attached to her name. But Silver Bullet does what she was built to do, and she does it well. She filled a large hole in Knott's Berry Farm's coaster lineup and continues to provide a great guest experience 2 decades after opening. She's not flashy by today's standards, but I would kind of argue she doesn't have to be. Instead of flashy, Silver Bullet is much more reliable, which is also a really great ride to have in any park. I will say personally, the last time I rode Silver Bullet was in 2022, and I walked away from my ride that day with a not great experience. We lucked out on our visit to Knott's that it wasn't a super busy day, but the ride ops on Silver Bullet were awful. Easily the worst wait we saw in the park the entire day. I mean, trains would double stack in the station. It would be a solid 8 minutes between a load cycle. The line was backed up quite far because it never seemed to move. It was really just an awful day for the crew there. However, overall, despite my personal bad experience with the ride, I don't think that... I don't think that's normally the case for Silver Bullet, and I would definitely argue that I would go back and try it again just to see if ride ops improved. I mean, they would have to have improved. They were really, really bad that day. In general, most fans still seem to really love and appreciate the coaster and how well it's held up over the past. So where will we see this ride in the future? Well, I'd say it's a safe bet to say that Silver Bullet will continue to dominate the Knott's skyline for this foreseeable future, and it wouldn't surprise me if we are celebrating her 30th anniversary in 2034. She's a solid ride after all, and dependable, and with Knott's so limited on space, it would be costly for them to replace the ride with something new until they absolutely had to. And if they were to replace Silver Bullet with essentially an updated model of the same ride, they'd have to close and demo the original first, taking one of their coasters out of the lineup for a long stretch of time. And for some reason, Knott's has a history of roller coasters not operating at that park. It's this weird curse they have, I swear. I mean, Accelerator just recently reopened after being down for over a year. And at the time of this recording, Montezuma's Revenge has no update on when it will reopen either. And we won't even get into the legacy of Windjammer Surf Racers right now, or we'll never actually get to the main roller coaster on today's episode. But Knott's has been cursed with standing but not operating rides, and I'm sure that they don't want to add Silver Bullet to that list. Safe to say then that I believe Knott's wants to keep this roller coaster operating for as long as possible, and I see no reason currently why they won't be able to make this a reality through the next decade. Now, like the Incredible Hulk at Islands of Adventure, Silver Bullet may eventually need some retracking due to her age and Knott's being a year-round park, but I think a retrack would only help to keep the ride functioning for the long term. So in my opinion, I'm all for it if it needs to be done. Overall, Silver Bullet is a great addition to Knott's Berry Farm, and a coaster that many of us tend to overlook unless we're actively queuing for her at the park. But it's high time we took a moment to celebrate her life. She may not be the biggest and the baddest coaster that California or the world has ever seen, but she is a steady and reliable workhorse, an overall crowd pleaser, and a great addition to the park. She'll be celebrating her 30th coastiversary before we know it, and we'll all be here to cheer her on. So, happy 20th birthday, Silver Bullet. Thank you for the unique memories and for that one time you were featured in the movie Knocked Up. You bring a lot to the B&M Inverted Coaster world, and we honestly don't give you nearly enough credit for what you do offer. Here's hoping we'll be back in 5 years and 10 years to take another look at you at the park. Well, let's take a moment here for a quick ad break. When we return, we're heading down to Texas to a brand new park to take a look at a monster of a wooden roller coaster that broke all sorts of records when she first premiered in the 1990s. Sit tight, we'll be right back. Sometimes it's so hard to wait for the things that we love. Vacations, visit with friends and families, and podcasts? Do you miss Once Upon a Coaster between seasons? Or even between episodes? Waiting for a new season of your favorite roller coaster podcast can be hard, but we've made the waiting a little easier by teaming up with Buy Me a Coffee to give our listeners the chance for roller coaster extras to enjoy between seasons or episodes, or whenever you have the time. At buymeacoffee.com/OUA coaster, we're talking about roller coasters all the time and would love for you to join us. There's a lot of free stuff over there for you to view, but if you're interested in even more fun from our team, you can become a member and unlock all the fun that we're having. For as little as $1 a month, you can unlock exclusive content like our defunct amusement park series, a look at old and abandoned amusement parks around the world, as well as our coffee break chats, where we discuss current roller coasters and amusement park news. Subscribers can also gain access to perks like early episode releases, free swag, social media shoutouts, and so much more. If you miss our podcast between seasons, or just want to support a small but growing podcast, be sure to head over to buymeacoffee.com/OUA coaster and join our support team. That's buymeacoffee.com/OUA coaster. Let's talk about coasters together. Hey friends, Once Upon a Coaster is currently hiring for a part-time writing position. If you have a love of roller coasters and theme parks and would like to help contribute to and grow our podcast with us, this might be the perfect position for you. Once Upon a Coaster is looking for a talented individual to help us manage and grow our Buy Me a Coffee subscription site. Duties would include researching and writing 1 to 2 monthly articles, helping to grow our subscriber base, and general contributions to our show lineup. Payment is scaled based on prior experience, and there are built-in bonuses and raises within the position for meeting our goals. This is a set-your-own-schedule position with approximately 4 to 8 hours of work monthly. Interested in learning more? Send us an email at hello@ouacpodcast.com for a job description including detailed job responsibilities, requirements for the position, and our pay scale. Once Upon a Coaster believes in honest pay for honest work, and our rates match or exceed the industry standards. This position is only available to U.S. citizens. Overall, so many episodes of Once Upon a Coaster this season seem to fall into that finally category. We've finally made it to an amusement park, or we finally are taking a look at a roller coaster that maybe we should have covered 2 years ago, but we just didn't have the time to make it happen. That feeling is no different today as we head to Six Flags Over Texas for the first time this episode to take a look at Texas Giant, the larger-than-life wooden roller coaster that helped to revolutionize the roller coaster industry forever with its construction. Now, we've covered a lot of Six Flags parks over the years, touching seemingly every corner of North America, as we've looked at some of the biggest and best coasters that the company has to offer. Yet somehow we never managed to make it to Over Texas, the original Six Flags park that was built to compete directly with Disneyland's success in California. But we're righting our wrongs today as we finally take a look at the park and the giant wooden roller coaster that once broke so many records and became an instant classic. Before we get too deep into this coaster's history, I want to clarify one thing from the get-go. The stats that we'll be providing for Texas Giant in the next few minutes are based on the original ride that opened at the park in 1990. Many of you may already realize where today's story is going, with the ride being redesigned and rebuilt in the 2000s. However, for the sake of this episode, a lot of our story today will be taking a more in-depth look at the original ride, which will be reflected in the information we'll be sharing throughout the episode. The stats for this ride change from version 1 to version 2, so I just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page here. If I'm referencing stats in this episode, it will be for the original ride, unless otherwise mentioned. But with that, let's take a look at some stats on Texas Giant. Texas Giant was a wooden roller coaster that operated at Six Flags Over Texas from 1990 until 2009. The ride, designed by Curtis Summers and manufactured by the Din Corporation, was part of the era of giant wooden roller coasters that exploded through North America in the 1990s. That decade gave us many, oh my gosh, many larger-than-life wooden roller coasters, including Rattler at Fiesta Texas, Mean Streak at Cedar Point, Predator at Darien Lake, Cyclone at Magic Mountain, Viper at Great America, Son of Beast at Kings Island, Georgia Cyclone at Six Flags Over Georgia. I mean, I could keep going with this list, honestly. The 90s were the era of large wooden roller coasters, and Texas Giant was just one of many to be built during that decade. For those of you who love these old 1990s wooden roller coasters, we have a few episodes already published covering some of them, including Mean Streak at Cedar Point and Rattler at Fiesta Texas, which to date remains one of my favorite episodes we've ever produced for Once Upon a Coaster. If you haven't given it a listen, it is a shameless plug from me to go back and listen to Rattler once you're done with this episode. Personally, I'm a big fan of these giant 1990s creations, so we'll continue to return to them as the seasons progress. Texas Giant opened with a top height of 143 feet, or 42 meters, making it the tallest wooden roller coaster in the world when it first debuted, taking riders up an astonishing 14 stories before dropping them back down. The tallest drop on Texas Giant was 137 feet, or 42 meters. The top speed on the ride was 62 miles per hour, or 100 kilometers per hour. The biggest drop on Texas Giant had a max vertical angle of 53 degrees, which at the time made it one of the steepest, if not the steepest, drops you could find on a wooden roller coaster. The total cost to build the ride was $5.5 million in 1990 terms, which today would cost $13.4 million after adjusted for inflation. That's honestly not a bad price for a coaster that large. For comparison, Mystic Timbers opened in 2017 to a cost of $15 million and is a decidedly smaller coaster than Texas Giant ever was. Today, that same ride would cost Kings Island about $19 million to build with inflation, so paying $5.5 million back in 1990 for Texas Giant seems almost like a steal in today's coaster market. The dream of a ride like Texas Giant started in the late 1980s, when Six Flags was looking to increase their footprint in the amusement park industry. The Six Flags of the 1980s was vastly different from the Six Flags we know today. Six Flags had begun as a regional amusement park based in Texas in the 1960s that, as I said, was created as a direct competitor to Disneyland. While the franchise originally built three brand new theme parks throughout the 1960s and 1970s, what we know today as Six Flags Over Texas, Over Georgia, and St. Louis, by the 1980s, they began to see real value in buying up other amusement parks throughout North America and rebranding them as Six Flags parks. By the time Texas Giant was dreamt into existence, Six Flags owned and operated seven different parks throughout America. The three I just listed, as well as Great Adventure, Astro World, Great America, and Magic Mountain. The chain was big by 1980 standards, but not nearly the corporate monstrosity that we know today. Six Flags had yet to buy out Premier Parks, and obviously the merger with Cedar Fair was still decades away from becoming a reality. Still, in the 1980s, it was safe to say that Six Flags was a large theme park company and was looking to draw more guests to their local parks with bigger and newer offerings. And what better way to do that than with some brand new roller coasters? The late 1980s was the pinnacle of modern era coaster wars, and Six Flags wanted in on it. In the spring of 1989, they watched one of their main competitors, Cedar Fair, launch the world's first hypercoaster with Magnum XL 200 at Cedar Point. Six Flags themselves would launch Great American Scream Machine at Great Adventure that same year, which would have been the talk of the season if it hadn't been for Magnum's premiere. It's funny to look back at this moment in time and wonder why Six Flags didn't immediately try to build their own hypercoaster to top Magnum's run as the leader. Magnum XL would remain the tallest and fastest steel roller coaster in the world until 1991, when Steel Phantom debuted at Kennywood. You have to wonder why the decision was made not to chase that goal from Six Flags' standpoint. They continued to invest heavily in new coasters in their parks, but it seemed to be a period of change for the chain, where they were experimenting with new builders, new designers, and new ride possibilities. 1990 saw Six Flags invest in another aero-looping coaster with Viper at Magic Mountain, their first floorless B&M coaster with Iron Wolf at Great America, and two giant wooden roller coasters at Over Georgia and Over Texas. That's right, when Six Flags finally decided to go all in on the wooden roller coaster for Over Texas, they apparently decided to get the discounted rate and also drew up plans for a similar ride to be built at Over Georgia as well. By the fall of 1989, Six Flags had contracted out with the Din Corporation for these two wooden builds and made the announcement to the general public that both coasters would be designed and opened for the 1990 season. The design for Texas Giant fell to Curtis D. Summers, a well-known figure in the roller coaster circle for his wooden roller coaster designs in the later half of the 20th century. Summers is often the name behind many of these larger-than-life wooden roller coasters that we see explode in popularity throughout North America in the 1980s and 1990s, and had involvement in such designs as Hercules at Dorney Park, Mighty Canadian Mindbuster at Canada's Wonderland, Thunder Run at Kentucky Kingdom, Predator at Darien Lake, and of course, Texas Giant and Georgia Cyclone. Summers passed away in 1992, and the opening of Mean Streak in May of 1991 would be his last North American coaster before his passing. I don't know about the rest of you listening to this episode, but personally, I have a very conflicting opinion about Summers and his overall body of work during his lifetime. I think the projects he was involved with earlier in his career produced some of the better coasters that we saw from him. Thunder Road at Carowinds, Ghoster Coaster at Canada's Wonderland, and I know a lot of you don't like Ghoster Coaster, but don't hate on me for this one. I've had two really good park visits with two really good rides on Ghoster Coaster, and I don't know what to tell you if you hate it. I understand, I don't agree. I kind of like the ride. And also, American Eagle at Great America are all well-designed and executed coasters from Summers. But then you start to see companies hiring Summers out to push the envelope with his builds. And I feel like that's where we start to lose sight of what wooden coasters could and should do. Summers seemed to like building these giant roller coasters, despite the fact that scaling a wooden roller coaster is not necessarily the same thing as scaling a steel roller coaster. If you remember, when we looked at Magnum XL 200 on this podcast, we talked about how both aerodynamics and Cedar Point were kind of flying blind on the design of their new hypercoaster. They basically figured that adding 40 feet of track to the top of their hill wouldn't be a problem, and for the most part, they were right in that assumption. Wooden roller coasters, though, they're a different breed. You know what I'm talking about here. Where steel coasters are stiff and permanent, wooden coasters move and flow more. They allow riders to experience a coaster that might almost feel unsafe at times because you realize you're being held up by nothing but wooden planks and bolts. Hindsight is 20/20, and I realize I'm critiquing Summers' designs 30 or more years after they were originally planned out. But looking back, Summers' legacy that he's left behind doesn't focus so much on some of his earlier and better designs, but instead on how many of his later designs have been scrapped or reworked because they failed to hold up over time as you would expect them to. And really, it's a shame because when his coasters were good, they were really good. They're fun and often offer some great thrills that you typically see on wooden roller coasters, like lots of airtime, big drops, and tight turns. When they're bad, though, oh boy. I will go to my grave insisting that Predator at Darien Lake is hands down the worst roller coaster I've ever ridden in my life. Others have come close on my scale, but Predator has never been dethroned from that top spot, and Predator has Summer's name all over it. But we're not here to talk about Predator in today's episode. No, instead, we're here today to talk about Texas Giant. Because Texas Giant, at the time it opened, was an engineering marvel. And despite how the story eventually unravels for it, we should appreciate what it was when it first opened in 1990. We already talked a few minutes ago about this, but Texas Giant opened as the tallest and fastest wooden roller coaster in the world when it first debuted. This coaster was monstrous. I feel sorry for the kids these days who will never get a chance to experience first-rate whiplash that some of these huge roller coasters gave us in the 1990s. Texas Giant was one of many that seemed to absolutely overpower the park's sightlines when guests visited. No matter where you happened to be at Over Texas, Texas Giant was right there in your field of view. Texas Giant ended up using 900,000 wooden board feet, 1,200 concrete piers, 10 tons of nails, and 81,000 bolts to complete the full construction on it. Again, we've come a long way from Roller Coaster at Lagoon Park, a 1920s wooden roller coaster which we covered earlier in an episode this season. And when Texas Giant opened, it opened to really good reviews. Like, really good reviews. It became an instant classic, and both fans and coaster critics praised Summers and Six Flags for building such a unique wooden roller coaster. The popularity of this ride extended through the rest of the decade, winning Amusement Today's Golden Ticket Award for the best wooden roller coaster in 1998 and 1999. Summers' designs always seemed to remain popular with guests for a while, and then quickly and suddenly fell out of favor with the general public, and Texas Giant was no different. By the 2000s, guests' appetite for roller coasters was changing. As ride technology evolved, fans were less willing to strap themselves into a ride that was seen as rough or rickety. Texas Giant fell into both of these categories by that time, and crowds to tackle the ride began to wane as the years passed. Six Flags found itself with a problematic wooden roller coaster only 15 years after it was first built, and they weren't quite sure what to do about it. The size of Texas Giant, as well as the cost, meant that Six Flags would be reluctant to tear the ride out completely so early in its lifespan. Texas Giant ate up a lot of land and a lot of resources for the park, and replacing it with a more modern roller coaster design would be expensive. Texas Giant also rounded out the roller coaster lineup at the park. If Texas Giant were to be removed, Judge Roy's Scream would be the only wooden roller coaster left at the park, a much smaller in scale wooden roller coaster designed by William Cobb in 1980. The trick for Six Flags was finding a balance for the park, a way to keep the spirit of Texas Giant as well as her size alive, while also improving the overall rideability of the structure to encourage guests to return once again to the now empty queue lines. The 2000s was a period of monumental change for the theme park industry. Even if we maybe didn't realize it at the time, we saw the likes of Aerodynamics fall to mounting debt and Vekoma file for bankruptcy in 2001, both who were titans of the roller coaster world in just the 80s and 90s. The world hit a sharp recession during this time period too, putting parks in a bind as attendance numbers took a dip as people stayed home to save money. Six Flags themselves would file for bankruptcy in 2008 after a decade of financial turmoil. From all of this unrest, new patterns started to emerge from both coaster design and theme park companies. First, the coaster's arm race officially was over for the most part. Parks didn't need to premiere a record-breaking ride every season to attract guests. Instead, parks worked to build coasters that offer a better ride experience for guests, whether it was through a new design feature, like a flying coaster, or through better builds, as we see in the growth of B&M during this time. Second, we see parks wanting to save money on these builds, even if it meant taking a gamble on a new and previously untested idea. Later this season, in two episodes to be exact, we're going to look in depth at how the idea of saving roller coasters began to gain traction in the early 2000s. And a coaster that sort of kicked off this whole idea that you didn't necessarily have to tear out a bad coaster, just fix the parts that were broken. I don't want to give too much away about this episode ahead of time, but when you listen to it in a few weeks, know that the coaster's redesign success put the wheels in motion for Texas Giant to essentially be saved a few years later. So, from all of this, a bad economy, a desire to cut costs throughout the industry, a hope to use better designs to fix older rides, it made absolute sense to me why Six Flags wanted to find another alternative to Texas Giant than to just simply tear it out. By 2008, they were ready to move forward with the idea of saving Texas Giant. The only problem was, saving a wooden roller coaster had never really been done before. But from the dust of a now-defunct aerodynamics came a surprising solution for Six Flags that would revolutionize the theme park industry for the 2010s and beyond. What's a roller coaster engineer to do when his company suddenly goes bankrupt in 2002? Well, for aero engineers, some of them ended up working for SNS, the company that eventually swallowed up all of aerodynamics' assets. But others, they kind of took a different path. Alan Schilke is an engineer who was involved in aerodynamics designs of rides such as Tennessee Tornado at Dollywood and X at Magic Mountain. He was there for the end days of Aero as a company, basically. And after SNS took over the assets, he worked to design several wooden roller coasters for the new company as well. But by 2009, he had already begun to offer engineering work to a newly formed ride company, Rocky Mountain Construction, based in Idaho. Rocky Mountain Construction, or RMC as many of us refer to it as, got their start as a small ride company that found limited success throughout America with one-off contracts helping to install things like sky coasters and miniature golf courses, as well as repairing sections of older wooden roller coasters. As the years passed, employees at RMC felt the biggest issue with the wooden roller coasters they were repairing was that the track being used on all of them couldn't stand the test of time and heat and humidity that many of these parks were throwing at these rides. Basically, they felt there had to be a better design out there that would help to keep these coasters running and popular for more than the 10 to 15 year lifespan that they were currently witnessing. And here, from the shadow of aerodynamics, came Alan Schilke to offer his own thoughts on track design. Together, RMC and Schilke patented a new steel track that could be used as a replacement for some of the older and aging wooden roller coaster tracks that were starting to seemingly pile up around North America and, in some cases, around the world. The track, which is commonly referred to today as iBox track, would include steel beams built and bent in-house to provide the smoothest ride possible for guests. The track would then be hauled to the site location where it could be installed directly on top of the wooden track supports with minimal adjustments needed to be made to the original structure. And on paper, this sounded like a good idea. But in light of all of the financial issues facing the world at the time, testing an unknown company with a brand new coaster design was a definite risk for a theme park to take. Six Flags, though, oddly enough, was willing to take the risk. They agreed to allow Rocky Mountain Construction to test their proof of concept on Texas Giant, rebuilding the track to improve guest experience. The cost for this risk was a cool $10 million, which to Six Flags must have seemed like an absolute bargain. Again, with the sheer size of Texas Giant, anything that might possibly replace the ride from the ground up would easily cost double that if they had to first tear the ride down. In 2009, Six Flags announced that Texas Giant would be saying its goodbyes to the world less than 2 decades after she first debuted. In her place, a first-of-its-kind hybrid roller coaster would be built, keeping as much of the original support system and layout as possible. And wow, knowing what we know now, it was a crazy time to watch this ride be partially demolished and built back up, wondering if the new ride would be a success. Sometimes there's a lot of fun in the unknown. And the Texas Giant rebuild was one of those moments in time. Being the first rebuild that Rocky Mountain ever completed, this project took a little bit of time. Nowadays, RMC can regularly complete projects like this in the off-season to be ready for the next year, but in the case of Texas Giant, the ride did not open again until April 2011. Six Flags wanted as much of the original ride to remain intact as possible, and Rocky Mountain Construction largely made that happen. Some changes made during the remodel include lifting the main hill on the coaster from 143 feet, or 44 meters, to 153 feet, or 47 meters, increasing the first drop from 137 feet, or 42 meters, to 147 feet, or 45 meters, increasing the vertical angle of the first drop from 53 degrees to 79 degrees, improving the lift hill speed to allow for a quicker transition from the station to the top of the hill, eliminating the double helix around the lift hill and replacing it with a banked airtime hill that travels under the lift hill, and increasing the angle on several turns throughout the ride, banking them further than they were previously banked to improve rideability and entertainment. The ride was also christened with a new name, New Texas Giant, to help signal to the visitors that while much had changed with the old wooden roller coaster, much had also stayed the same. The coaster opened to universal praise and positive reviews from both enthusiasts and casual fans alike. Early riders were impressed with how much more enjoyable the ride elements on New Texas Giant were when they weren't busy rattling around the track simply trying to hold on for dear life. The success of the rebuild did several things at once for the coaster community. First, it gave RMC much-needed approval for their proof-of-concept track design and allowed them to grow their business with new offers from theme parks with aging wooden roller coasters. Their business would see immediate payoff after New Texas Giant, with Six Flags hiring them again to fix Rattler at Fiesta Texas. Second, it gave theme parks a new option for older wooden roller coasters that seemed too big to fail in years past. Wanting to get a sound return on such large investments, some parks had been hesitating to demolish these old and unpopular rides. Now it seemed as though their hesitancy might have paid off. They had another option to consider now, and over the next decade, many parks did exactly that, working with RMC to save one of their coasters. Finally, for the first time since maybe I'd argue B&M debuted their floorless steel coaster, fans saw how great a new ride design could be for the roller coaster world. To this day, RMC's effect on the coaster community has had a lasting impression. Every single one of us listening to this can definitively tell you when we got to experience our first RMC roller coaster. Maybe it was New Texas Giant, maybe it was Twisted Colossus, maybe it was Steel Vengeance, but we all remember that moment because it was such a defining moment in our own personal roller coaster journey. The creation of the iBox track has basically created a new class of roller coasters, a hybrid model that isn't quite steel and it isn't quite wood either. It's a meshing together of all the best elements from both models and has resulted in an overwhelmingly positive rider experience since New Texas Giant first premiered. Today, I don't think a lot of people would argue that New Texas Giant is the best roller coaster that RMC has ever remodeled. It's a solid coaster, don't get me wrong. But so much has improved since it premiered that there are much stronger contenders in their personal portfolio. I personally have my own thoughts and opinions about which of their builds is the best, but I'll save that for another day. I don't want too many of you to get too angry at me. But even if it might not be the best that RMC has to offer us anymore, New Texas Giant is still an above-average roller coaster that has helped to save an old wooden ride that was, in another lifetime, on its way out the door before Six Flags took a gamble with RMC. Today, there are so many roller coasters out there that we could argue needs to be RMC'd, and what's funny is that 15 years ago, RMC wasn't even a term that we had coined yet. Much like we talk about the evolution of roller coasters bringing us under-friction wheels and steel designs and vertical loops, in years to come, historians will look at how the iBox track brought us not only a hybrid roller coaster design, but how it helped to preserve older roller coasters for fans to continue to enjoy. New Texas Giant may not be the same ride that first opened in 1990 to rave reviews, but the history is still there. The memories for so many people are still there. And the heart has returned to a ride that had once been scorned by so many guests. I am often overly critical about Six Flags on this podcast. I think they make business decisions that honestly leave me scratching my head a lot of the times. But I, of all people, need to give them a lot of credit here. By saving Texas Giant, they provided coaster fans everywhere with a huge win and allowed the evolution of coaster design to change with the times. Basically, they took a big risk, but got a huge reward for it too. New Texas Giant, I am quite convinced, will be the last ride to ever be torn out of Six Flags Over Texas. If the day comes where all the roller coasters in Texas say their goodbye to guests, I firmly believe that New Texas Giant will still be there, still sending cars through the track over and over again and showcasing just how far the coaster design has come in the past 30 years or so. She's a giant of a ride and a giant of a moment in roller coaster history. It's kind of why we wanted to cover her so badly on this podcast, because even if you didn't originally like Texas Giant, which is fair in the last years of her life, there's no denying that New Texas Giant has forever changed the roller coaster landscape that we know. Whew, these old wooden roller coasters, let me tell you, I love to tell their stories so much. These always end up being some of my favorite episodes to make, and I'm glad we got to chat about Texas Giant together today. As we wrap up this episode, a reminder that we are coming to the end of this season very quickly. Only 2 more episodes are remaining. We will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode and a brand new coaster to talk about. We're heading back to Florida for the first time in, I don't know, forever? I think the last coaster we covered in Florida was Dueling Dragons in season 2, so it has been a moment since we were in Florida. But we are back, and we will be visiting a brand new park next time on this podcast. It's a fun episode, and I can't wait to chat more with you about it then. Until next time, I'm Lizzie, and this has been another episode of Once Upon a Coaster. Stay safe, be well, and I'll talk to you real soon. Bye! Once Upon a Coaster is an independently run and produced podcast show. Today's episode was written and hosted by Lizzie. Additional writing and research by Rachel Macquarie and Matt Day. Accessibility support by Jacqueline Falker. Our Buy Me a Coffee content creator is Kelby Fox. We have IT support from Patrick McCoy. This episode cannot be reproduced or replicated in any form without the express written permission of our podcast. A special thank you to our Buy Me a Coffee supporters and to all coaster lovers everywhere who tune into our show.